We are three games down into a critical 13-game stretch. The Diamondbacks taking 2-3 against the St. Louis Cardinals. Next up is the Chicago Cubs, also from the National League Central. We're going to talk about this series with Jack Vita coming in to join the show on today's episode of the Snakes on the Diamond podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Snakes on the Diamond podcast. I'm your host, Mike McDermott, and I am joined here today by Jack Vita of the Jack Vita Show. So, Jack, how are you doing today?
I'm great, Michael. Thank you for having me here. And I have lived in Chicago my whole life, but it looks like I'll be relocating and joining you here out in the desert very soon. I'm out here for a little bit, enjoying the warm weather. I'll be at two of the three games this weekend, or this week, I should say. But I followed the Cubs very closely my whole life. I'm in multiple group chats with Cubs fans. So I think I got my finger on the pulse as it relates to this team.
And as we get into that, we'd like to implore you, if you're listening in on the podcast, which is available on Apple, Google, or Spotify, make sure to leave a 5-star review and a comment about what you like about the show. And if you're watching on YouTube, make sure to hit that like, subscribe, turn on notifications, and let us know in the comments what you think this series, how many games the D-backs will win this series. So obviously the first topic, we'll get into the pitching matchups. Both teams dealing with significant rotation injuries. In the Diamondbacks case, Eduardo Rodriguez actually suffered a latch strain in a spring training game against the Cubs on March 19th. We found out over the weekend that he experienced a setback in this thing, and it's back to square one in his recovery process. Jordan Montgomery will be available in the next series for the Diamondbacks when they go to San Francisco, but they'll have Tommy Henry and Ryan Nelson making one more start. So moving on to the Chicago rotation, obviously I think Justin Steele was out since opening day with a hamstring injury. I think Jameson Taillon hasn't pitched a game yet this year. What's the current... I guess you can say feeling of the Cubs rotation as is right now.
By the fan base or by the team?
I think the fan base. I don't remember. Double check to see if there was anything on. I remember seeing something on MLB trade rumors about those two. But I'll let you go on and talk right now while I go find
it. Yeah, I think the fan base, what you see a lot just in general as it relates to social media, is people being overly dramatic. So a lot of fans I've been hearing as I listen to Chicago sports radio, people calling into Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, reading social media, there's a lot of angst and probably frustration and people saying it would have been great if the Cubs had gone out and they had signed Jordan Montgomery or Blake Snell or added a little more rotational depth going into the season. However, I actually like what they did over the winter. I like that they're getting some opportunities here to some young guys. Javier Assad has been criminally underrated. He's so far this year, he just won again yesterday. Three starts with a 2.16 ERA. He kind of saved their season last year when Stroman and Taillon and some of those guys got hurt. He emerged, finally got a chance to start. He's been kind of like a swing man. They've used him as a long reliever, make some spot starts. I thought he was one of the 5 or 10 best rookies in the National League last year. So he's been fantastic for them. Shota Imanaga, of course, he's, if you want to look at what's happened so far, and I'm sure we'll get into all of it, the Cubs have had two high-impact rookies. One is a pitcher, one's a position player. Imanaga, three starts, has not allowed a run yet. And then you've got, you know, Jordan Wicks got an opportunity. Tonight you're going to get a chance to look at Ben Brown. This is Ben Brown's second career start. The Cubs acquired him in the David Robertson trade with the Phillies at the trade deadline 2 years ago. So I think you're getting a lot of overreactions from people who want the Cubs to win now. But I actually think this stretch here, yeah, it's going to be a little tough if you're trying to compete for this year, but it could potentially be a good opportunity for a lot of these young guys to get some run in the rotation, and that could set them up better long term.
Yeah, so you're looking at Ben Brown, who's going to be starting game one of the series, facing off against Merrill Kelly, who's been one of the most underrated pitchers in baseball the last couple of years. The thing I noticed about Ben Brown, obviously, is the velocity and the swing and miss ability that he has already showing this year. Fastballs up to 97 miles and averaging 97 miles per hour with it's a pretty flattish fastball because it has a lot of horizontal movement, but it still gets a lot of carry on it nonetheless. And he also has a curve. Looks like he has a curveball and a changeup, although looking at his pitch usage, he's pretty much a fastball curveball guy. Is what it looks like. That's based off the Statcast numbers.
Yeah, so, and Ben Brown is... Sorry.
No, obviously, the sample size is kind of small, so you can't really take the numbers into consideration for what to expect.
Yeah, Ben Brown is another one of these guys. Like, if you take a look at what the Cubs have done over the past 4 or 5 years, from when Theo was the VP of baseball ops, that era, and they really struggled with player development from about 2012 to 2020 or so. Yes, they had that core that won a World Series, but most of those players, a lot of them were guys that they did not draft. They did not draft especially well, and especially pitching. A lot of pitching, that was a sore spot for them. Dylan Cease is probably the most notable guy that they drafted and developed as a pitcher. Kyle Hendricks, Jake Arrieta, those are guys that they traded for. They signed John Lester. And so for a long time, they really didn't have a whole lot coming up through their farm system, and especially with pitching. But since Dan Kantrovitz has come in as a scouting director, I think his first draft was 2020. You've seen an overhaul there. Carter Hawkins, of course, becoming the GM, with Jed Hoyer being promoted to take Theo's spot. And now they've got a lot of very intriguing pitching prospects. So much so, I mean, Cade Horton is a guy that I know executives from other teams have been raving about. I've talked to executives from other teams. They love Cade Horton. Ben Brown's another top 100 prospect they have. And, you know, Jordan Wicks was another one that he came up last year. But the other thing to note here is Jackson Ferris. He was he's another one of those pitchers. Because they've had so much depth as it relates to pitching in their farm system, they went out and they ended up, we saw a rare prospect swap. We don't really see this happen too often. And I think we should see it more because I love the thought behind it, where if you've got too much at one position in your farm system and there are other things that you could add to improve your organization, go out and make a trade with a team like the Dodgers, where they send Michael Bush over to the Cubs for Jackson Ferris. It's essentially a prospect swap. I think there may have been another player thrown in there as well, but the Dodgers didn't have really a space for Michael Bush to play every day, and he was ready to come up to the big leagues. And the Cubs flipped Jackson Ferris, who they really like. He's a really good pitching prospect, and I'm sure he's going to have a good career too. Michael Bush might be is he the front runner for the National League Rookie of the Year? Is it him or Imanaga? The Cubs have probably two of the five best rookies right now in the sport.
Yeah. So looking at Bush, Bush does have rookie eligibility for 2024. And obviously there are three Asian players coming from Korea and Japan that could all have a pretty strong case for rookie year. You got Imanaga, Yamamoto, Lee, the Giants. Like, it's going to be pretty interesting rookie of the year race, in my opinion.
Yeah, there are a lot of guys that are going to be interesting. I mean, even like an under the radar, like an Oliver Dunn or maybe a Jackson Churio, both those guys from the Brewers. And there are a lot of very exciting rookies this year. But for the Cubs right now, as they're three games over 500, and this is a division that people have talked not a lot of great things about, but four of the five teams have records above 500 and look like, you know, it looks like this could be a very interesting division race going up to the final month. 9-6. Why are they 9-6? The biggest reason offensively, their best player offensively has been Michael Busch, who's been playing primarily at first base for them. He's homered in his last four games. I believe if he hits a home run tonight, I think that either ties or sets a franchise record. I don't think that's either happened before and he'll be tying it, or it might be the first time in franchise history, but he is on fire. He's batting .327 with .393 on base and an OPS over 1,000. And if you look at the rest of the lineup, I mean, I'm curious to think, what do you think of this lineup as someone who doesn't follow the team quite as closely from you're a beat writer for another team. What do you think of this Cubs lineup?
Yeah, I think it's a pretty interesting lineup. Like I said, Cody Bellinger obviously last year overperformed his batted ball data, but this is a guy who has a track record of with quality power production. He won the MVP in 2019. It's not completely out of the picture that he could bounce back this year and prove that last year's numbers weren't necessarily a fluke. Also, Seiya Suzuki is a player who's, in my opinion, one of those guys that's very underrated. Yeah. I don't think he gets talked out. He doesn't get talked much about as an all-star candidate, even though he's probably one of the better right fielders in the game, both offensively and defensively. And then you look at the lineups, obviously solid up the middle defense by Dansby Swanson and Nico Horner. You got pretty good defense there. Bellinger can still play center field. But for me, I think that like the key for them, for Chicago to win the division, is getting more production out of Ian Happ. And then I'm not exactly sure who's playing third base for them this year. I don't know if they're doing like a platoon or if there's just a guy there.
Maybe you can fill me in on that.
How has he looked there defensively?
I think he's okay. I mean, he's a really good athlete. He's got good arm strength. He can play that position. He's a guy who really has not gotten a position to play regularly at the major league level since he made his debut. And, you know, one of the things that was very odd that a lot of people never quite understood, he had a very good rookie year. Like, not an outstanding rookie year, but he was one of the bright spots in what was a very, let's just say it was a sad 2022 season. That was not a good year for the Cubs. He was a bright spot. He was interesting. He had a very good rookie campaign, and he didn't even crack the opening day roster last year. David Ross left him off the opening day roster. He had Luis Torrens and Edwin Rios, and there were a couple of Miles Mastroboni were all in front of him. And then when he got brought up, keep in mind, at this point in time, the Cubs are trotting out Trey Mancini every day and Eric Hosmer every day. David Ross gives a quote where he says, "I don't see a fit for Morel to play regularly." So I don't understand that logic. I don't really see why you are needing to get Trey Mancini or Eric Hosmer at bats at this point in their careers, especially when you've got a young guy who has the potential to hit 30 homers in a season. But now you've got, for the first time in his career, he does have a position that he's playing regularly. He's got a lot of power. I mean, the numbers aren't looking too great right now. I don't really know. This will be kind of an opportunity to see if he's a guy who sticks into their long-term plans or not, or where he fits, or maybe he ends up being a utility bench guy. But he does have a chance to start every day. He is playing third base. Michael, to your point about the lineup, the way I see it, I'll make a comment here about Suzuki. Suzuki really ascended in the final 2 months of last season. He was in a big slump. He struggled in the middle of the summer. David Ross benched him for a series. And then from that point on, he responded very well to that. And he was an elite hitter in the National League for the last 2 months. Going into this year, he's repeating how he finished last year. There is a question of, can he sustain this for a longer period of time? But I certainly think he can. And I do think that he is a guy who could emerge as an all-star this year. Maybe he makes his first all-star team.
Yeah, because you're looking at Suzuki's numbers. Obviously, this is a pretty small sample size, but 15 games, he's got an OPS plus of 139, three homers, and he's got all the tools to be a Gold Glove winning right fielder, in my opinion. So defensive metrics are there, I think he's going to win the Gold Glove in right field this season. So that's why I say he's very underrated, in my opinion, because he can do everything you want. He has everything you want in that position.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So, but then for me, as I look at this team, and the reason why I picked the Cubs to win 84 games this year, I think they won 83 last year. I actually kind of like the rotation, and we can go back to that in a second, but I kind of like the rotation. I like some of these young guys. The thing for me is I look at this lineup and I don't, you know, you do have the emergence of Michael Busch right now. Will he sustain that? That's a question. Will Suzuki sustain what he did last year? Will Bellinger do what he did last year? Like, I don't see any certainties in this lineup where it's like, that's a guy I can count on each day who's going to bat 290, hit 30 homers, or however you want to measure that, driving 100 RBI, whatever it is. But I do like Suzuki. I like Busch. And I have to think, I mean, Bellinger right now is off to a terrible start. You need Bellinger to do what he did last year in order to have a fighting chance. Because last year, Bellinger was a top 10 player in the National League. They were 14 games better with Bellinger than without Bellinger. So Bellinger was what made this team go offensively. If Bellinger can't do what he did last year, that's a huge, huge loss. And then if you look at the rest of the lineup, I like Nico Horner. I think he's a very good player. He's off to a slow start. But the rest of the lineup, and then Morel is another one where it's like, hey, Morel, I could see him hitting 30 homers, but posting a low average, striking out a lot. I don't really know what Christopher Morel is going to do in a full season at this position. But then, like, Dansby Swanson last year, in the final 4 months of the season, he had an on-base either below or right around 300. He was really, really not good offensively last year, and they're paying him a lot of money. Yan Gomes, you're relying on him. He had a great year for them last year, but he's 36 now, and it's just like, I don't see, and then Ian Happ, I'm not a big believer in Ian Happ. I think he'll get on base, but he's also somehow a two-time Gold Glove Award winner, but he is a liability defensively in left field. I don't know how he's won those Gold Gloves, but for me, I look at this lineup and I like Busch, I like Suzuki, but I just don't think it's a very potent, deep lineup. That's the hang up. And also the bullpen. I don't believe in this bullpen either.
Well, yeah, I was going to say both teams, if you're not believing this bullpen, I'm going to say both teams kind of, this could be a which bullpen doesn't give up as many runs series. Like if you look at the Diamondbacks bullpen, if the Cubs can make Miguel Castro and Scott McGuff pitch important innings, they're going to be in pretty good shape to score late runs.
Yeah, Albert Alzolay is the Cubs closer. I think he blew a save on opening day. Mark Leiter Jr., Drew Smyly, Yency Almani. They did go out and add a Hector Neris, but the question I have with Hector Neris is I think he has logged the second or third most amount of innings over the last 3 or 4 years for a reliever. Is there a little bit of wear on the tires there, you know, because has he been overused potentially? Why did Houston not resign him? Jose Kwas was someone that they traded for last year. He has not been very good. Now they will get an opportunity again. They do have some young guys. Keegan Thompson, who a couple years ago they had him, he pitched as a starter. They also used him as a reliever. Whenever he came up, it was either 21 or 22, he had a very nice stretch for them. And then last year, I don't really know what happened to him, but he's been in AAA for the past year. He just got brought back up with Jose Kwas hitting the IL. So I got questions about this bullpen. There are opportunities for some of these young guys to establish themselves. And then one other thing I want to note is we mentioned the Jameson Taillon injury. Taillon was also really, really not good for them last year. He had an ERA over 5. And I to me, it's crazy. Like, I don't know if he's, it'll be interesting to see, because of their injuries, he will return to the rotation. But at some point, if you get these young guys and they're pitching well, where does he fit? Are you going to eventually move him to your bullpen, or what are you going to do with Tyone? Or, you know, maybe he bounces back. Maybe he has a better year, and maybe he's just a competent back in the rotation starter. But I don't see a very high ceiling. Whereas I would much rather see Assad, Imanaga, Wicks, if Cade Horton can come up later this year. And we also got to touch on Kyle Hendricks, because that's probably, you asked me what's the feel for the pitching staff and the team right now. One of the biggest things that everyone's kind of talking about is Kyle Hendricks cooked? That was the question I had in a group text the other day. And yes, Kyle Hendricks, he's off to a poor start. He's got an ERA over 12. It's important to note that he is traditionally a very slow starter. He does not do well throughout his entire career. He has not pitched well in April, by and large. Last year, coming back from that shoulder injury that sidelined him for most of 2022, he had a 3.74 ERA in 24 starts. A lot of people thought he was done then. I understand that Hendricks has never been a guy with overpowering stuff, so I feel like throughout his career, he's been underappreciated in a lot of regards. But a guy like that, I think, can have a very long career because he's never had to rely on having that big-time fastball when he's only throwing 88. I think he could have a Jamie Moyer-type career and pitch for a very, very long time. I'm not willing to say that after three poor starts, he's done and that the Cubs should move on from him. And I don't think the Cubs are thinking that either. But that is the knee-jerk reaction in Chicago right now.
I'm going to say you probably don't want to necessarily react to sample sizes this season so far, because Kyle Hendricks has only had three starts, 238 pitches, 54 batted balls. Although, even though the batted ball data is bad in those three starts, Hendricks is a pretty known quantity. He's a guy that moves the ball around his own good command, can change speeds, sinker changeup guy. And he can give over aggressive lineups some fits by getting the chase some pitches. However, he's the type of pitcher, if you can get him to throw it over the heart of the plate, you're going to have success against him. And Hendricks will be pitching game two against Tommy Henry, who is kind of in that same mold. Like, Henry is about 89 to 91 with his fastball. The command can come and go. Like, the command isn't consistent enough for him to stick in the rotation. That's why he was actually on the outside looking in for a rotation spot before Rodriguez went down. And I'm not sure what the team will do once Montgomery's added back in the rotation in San Francisco. Like, Ryan Nelson actually probably saved his season on Saturday against the Cardinals, where he threw 6+, allowed one run, pitched out of a second, third, no-out jam in his final completed inning, and then the D-backs ended up taking the lead for good three batters into the bottom half of the inning. That was a bit. That could be one of those moments where it's like a big moment when you look back on the season. And Nelson's the only guy of the two that has cleared the sixth inning. So I don't know if that is a factor for that, but we'll see. It'll be an important start for Henry, I believe, on Tuesday.
Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, that was pretty much it. I was going to say, I don't know if you've seen him pitch at Chase Field when you were covering the Astros series last year, but... Oh, wait, no, he was injured. Never mind. You wouldn't have.
Yeah, he wasn't pitching that weekend. I don't think I've seen him pitch in person, but the other thing I wanted to note on Kyle Hendricks is I think one of those games that he did not pitch well was one of those games at Wrigley where the wind was just blowing out, and there was just like a lot. It was probably like an over 13 runs on that game. But, yeah, it'd be interesting to see, take a look at Henry tonight on Tuesday, and then Wednesday we'll get the Jordan Wicks and Brandon Pfaadt matchup, which it's interesting because both those guys have not put up very good numbers to start this year, but we know what they're both capable of, because Pfaadt, they're both young guys with a bright future, I would say.
Yeah, I was gonna say Pfaadt's first starts were pretty decent. First two starts are pretty good. Like I said, the box score line looks pretty bad against Atlanta because he made one mistake with runners on base and the ball cleared the fence by about a foot. before that, Marcel Ozuna 3-run homer, and ended up a game where Diamondbacks had a 6-0 lead, 8-2 lead, and ended up being a 9-8 loss to the Braves. But and then he got bombed pretty hard against the Cardinals last time out, but despite giving up 6 runs in 3 innings, he ended up stretching all the way to the 6th inning, which helped save the D-backs bullpen for later in that series. And I think that goes under, that's a start that goes underlooked, because the Diamondbacks ended up taking next 2 games with a rested bullpen. That's why I think of it, basically.
He gave the team a chance to regroup. It's very early, so a lot of these numbers don't mean too much to me. I mean, if you want to take a look at the major leagues as a whole, there are a lot of records that don't make a whole lot of sense to me. Like the Astros are in last place right now. They're 6-11. And you've got Kansas City Royals only a half game out of first place in the AL Central. So I don't know. I think we all want to, especially in our kind of world of media, we want to overreact to things and push stories and get page clicks or whatever it is. And we dramatize stuff, but it's so early. Like, I mean, last year there are so many, I remember the Dodgers got off to a bad start and people were saying like, oh no, what's happening in LA? And there's some other teams that got off to bad starts, but I think it's the main thing is you just don't want to be horrible in the first month.
Yeah. I was going to say, Diamondbacks, obviously, if they are not horrible for the first month, they're going to get reinforcements in May with Seawald, possibly Perdomo as well, coming off the IL, Rodriguez, depending on how quickly that shoulder gets better. And assuming the team doesn't get further depleted in center field and shortstop, they're kind of depleted in those two areas. Blaze Alexander, Kevin, is the only shortstop that was on their original 40-man roster that's still healthy entering the season. They had to DFA Martin, who was claimed by Milwaukee off waivers, to get Kevin Newman on the roster just to have a semi-competent backup shortstop that they could play late in games. Because Alexander's defense hasn't been good to start the year. I think he had a rough stretch on the road trip where he was everything but sure-handed. He had a key error against the Braves in game one of that series, and he turned a 5-3 lead into a 6-5 loss. And then he had an error on a routine ground ball, one batter before Tommy Henry gave up a 2-run homer. That D-backs had a 2-1 lead. It became a 3-2 loss, but the D-backs came back to win that game 5-3 on Sunday. So they're still working with Blaze out there. He had a pretty clean game on the series finale against the Cardinals, started a key double play. So they're hoping that the glove can come around so that way they can give him the majority of starts at shortstop the next 5 to 6 weeks and see what they have with him, because he's done pretty well in the matchups they've put against him. He's been primarily starting against lefties, and he's hitting them very well, both his home runs against lefties. And in those games, I think he's hitting .333 in games started by a left-hander, so the bat's been a nice surprise for the team. I think you'll definitely see him against Wicks for sure.
Be fun, fun matchup to see.
Yeah. So, got any more? So also one more thing. How's Craig Counsell look so far as manager? Obviously in Arizona, he's a folk hero for his NLCS MVP and I think underrated World Series playing game, 2001 as well.
You know, I think, so far, he's looked good. I would say that there's a little more trust that the fan base has with his decision making than with David Ross. David Ross, we got to remember that David Ross got hired with no coaching experience. He basically got hired for being Grandpa Rossi, the veteran leader on that World Series team in 2016. And there, you know, like it was a trend around that time in 2019 when he got hired, was there were a lot of teams that were hiring managers without much experience because the front office felt that they could maybe have a little more control or a little more say over matters. Theo hired him. Theo's gone. And he managed the team for 4 years. One thing with David Ross is that where he deserves credit is his guys seem to get up to play for him. Like, I thought that Cubs team overachieved for much of last season. And then in the final month, their record caught up with them. But tactically, I don't think he was a great tactical manager. And the way he used his bullpen, he burnt out a lot of those guys at the end of the year. Like we were talking about earlier, he had this weird kind of heavy preference over playing guys like Eric Hosmer and Trey Mancini over young players, especially in a time when you're kind of in a, I don't want to say a rebuild, but you're retooling your roster. So those guys were playing over Morel and Nelson Velasquez, and Alexander Canario comes up at the end of the year and he's barely playing. He hits a grand slam and then he hits the bench for like a week. He did the same thing with Nelson Velasquez early in the season. He had like a big, heavy preference of veteran players. And he also had a stubbornness where Ian Happ was batting third like the whole season. And he really, really, really struggled in the second half of last year, did not perform well in that spot. And he just refused to ever change that lineup. And I think with Council, there's a lot more trust to know that, believe it or not, Craig Council, as great a manager as he is, he's never actually been named National League Manager of the Year, which is unbelievable to me because I feel like he should have won it at least twice, maybe three times by now. He's a great manager.
He should have won it last year, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's more built-in trust so far. So I haven't seen anything online of any fans like saying like, oh my gosh, how could you do that? I'm sure some of that exists. There's always going to be that. But there's a greater trust as it relates to bullpen management, tactical decisions, even doing stuff like, I think he's doing a little more of like lefty righty, like he's got a different lineup versus left-handed pitchers and righties. And with Ross, I don't really think you were seeing quite as much of that. I mean, I'm certain he was doing that to some degree, but like, it's way more obvious with Council, and there's just a greater trust in Council from the fan base.
Even though Council's not winning Manager of the Year awards, I mean, the people's whose opinion matters says a lot considering how much they're paying him to manage the team.
Oh yeah. Hey, Michael, record breaking contract. About the Brewers here for a second.
Yeah.
The Brewers were my pick to win the National League Central, and they were like a plus 650. They had the fourth highest odds. They're in first place right now. And yeah. I think the Brewers are going to do it again.
Their front office is unbelievable. They lose David Stearns and they don't miss a beat. Well, actually, David Stearns hadn't been as involved in recent years, but they were able to keep that coaching staff intact for the most part. I think they elevated Pat Murphy to be the bench from the bench coach to the manager. So there's a lot of continuity on the staff. I think that's an underrated aspect of their offseason. They didn't suffer as many losses as they could. They got some pretty good players back for Corbin Burnes, knowing that that could actually extend their contention window, even if DL Hall and Joey Ortiz aren't necessarily all-star level players, but they're quality impact guys, whether Hall's a starter or maybe even their long-term closer replacement for Devin Williams, who's on the IL. And then Ortiz is a competent starter at almost any infield position. So the Brewers continue to find hidden value, and that's kind of where I think that's kind of the impressive thing considering they're one of the smallest markets in baseball.
Yeah, it's amazing what they do. They're kind of like Gonzaga. It's like they're constantly putting out a winning program, winning team. And then I have organizational trust with the Brewers to just continue to draft pitching well and develop pitching. I mean, Jacob Mizorowski, will he be up this year? Maybe, maybe not. But I'm so impressed with them. They've made the playoffs 5 of the last 6 years. I think they've won the division 3 of those last 6 years. And they're constantly being slept on. I slept on them going into last year. I didn't want to make that mistake. I thought that this was kind of a great time to pick the Brewers because so many people were down on them. And this division's wide open. There's no great team in this division, but there are a lot of solid, interesting teams here. The big difference that I see with this Brewers team as it relates to the last handful of teams that they've had is I think their lineup has a lot more length than it had in years past. There are a lot of really good young players in there. William Contreras is batting like 350 right now. Willy Adames is off to a good start. But also Sal Frelick and Jackson Churio, who we mentioned. Oliver Dunn has been, Fall League Breakout Player of the Year. He's another one of those hidden gems. They got him in a trade from the Phillies in November because they were going to – I don't think he was going to be on their 40-man. And, I mean, he's been their leadoff guy for quite a bit. Joey Ortiz is off – he's done very well. Like, they've got a lot of really good young players, and they've been scoring a lot of runs. And that's why – they've been able to make up for the loss of Brandon Woodruff and Corbin Burns.
Yeah, they had the prospect capital to go target a frontline starter at the deadline. Although Shane Bieber going down obviously hurts their impacts the pool. Garrett Cole's not leaving New York.
No.
So that'll be interesting to see who they land, but there's plenty of options for them.
Yeah.
If they want to go that route. So yeah, Milwaukee's in very great shape, short and long term.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I really like Milwaukee. Can I ask you real quick before we sign off, who's your pick to come out of the NL Central this year?
Milwaukee. Like I said, that team just knows how to retool and not lose.
Right. Yeah. It's like, I think they're the safest bet. If you said, okay, you get any of these five teams, one of them, you have to pick one to win 88 to 92 games. I'm picking Milwaukee. I don't know if their ceiling is that too much higher than that. Maybe it is. Maybe I'm wrong. Like, I think the Reds probably have the highest ceiling if everything could click, come together, that they could win, 95 games, something like that. But I don't have that much trust in the Reds pitching staff and pitching in that ballpark. I do have trust in the Brewers to just keep figuring it out. And the Pirates are off to a good start. It'd be interesting to see if the Pirates could sustain this because I do like quite a bit of their young players, and we might see Paul Skeens relatively soon.
Yeah, Skeens isn't going to be close to his ceiling. Obviously, Pittsburgh's going to be very hopeful when he gets there, but he might not necessarily be a frontline starter year one or even year two. That's something that's and Pittsburgh's kind of in that same shape as Milwaukee. I think obviously Milwaukee has the better position player group, but Pittsburgh's starting Mitch Keller on opening day, and to me, Keller is a two or a three starter in pretty much every team that has playoff aspirations rotation. In my opinion. Yeah. So
well, that's how I would phrase the Cubs lineup is past Suzuki, Bush, and Bellinger. I think the rest of the lineup on a playoff team is like seven hitters.
Yeah. That's pretty much it. Like I said, the NL Central is so open. I think you got, like I said, depending on what Pittsburgh does, you got three teams I think that could conceivably win the division. So it could dumb down to who makes the best trades at the deadline to push that team over the top.
Well, our friend Jesse Friedman over at PHNX, we had a conversation a few weeks ago, and he picked the Cardinals to win the division. And actually, a lot of people picked the Cardinals. They had the highest odds, I think, in some sports books. So it's just really interesting because there are so many different ways to look at it. What do you think of the Cardinals, Michael?
Well, watching them play, I think the Cardinals definitely have some... I think the Cardinals are probably the most flawed team in that division, if you ask me. Like I said, their lineup had a pretty bad... After going off on Fott, Joe Mantiply, Scott McGuffin game one, they got shut down pretty good by both Nelson and Gallen. And, of course, Gallen's going to pitch with a little bit of extra motivation because the Cardinals traded him. But traded him in the Marcell Ozuna trade, which is looking very bad for them, obviously, in hindsight.
Yeah.
It's like they were the Cardinals had plenty of run scoring situations, and I'm talking like gimme run situations, and they did not score at all against both Nelson and Gallen. Like I said, Saturday, as I said earlier, and they had second, third, nobody out. Nelson gets a ground ball to third. Goldschmidt gets cut down at the plate. And then the next batter hits a line drive to medium deep right field, but the runner to third kind of had Nolan Gorman had a bad read, so he wasn't able to tag up properly. Couldn't score. And then they had a decision after the Nelson walked Nootbaar intentionally. It's like they elected to keep Jordan Walker in the game because Walker had two hits, extra base hits in that game, although one of them was kind of like a cheap ground ball that got into the corner and a fluky bounce allowed him to take an extra base. Nelson ends up striking him out on three pitches instead of them going to Alec Burleson off the bench, which they did later in that game against Ryan Thompson in another key situation. That was And for me, Nelson, again, the big situation against Nelson, you should send a left-handed hitter up because he doesn't have swing and miss against that side of the plate. But that's, it is what it is. And then, of course, Zach Gallen had a base loaded one out situation, but was facing 8 and 9 hitters, rung up Crawford, and then got Ciani to roll over the first base. That was really the only run scoring situation the Cardinals really had against Gallen. I think they also had a run third one out in the fourth, but Gallen got a strikeout of Yvonne Herrera and then lazy contact to get out of that inning. Although I feel like it's a case where if you strike out a guy with the runner third and one out, I feel like it's the pitcher won that at bat versus a ball in play.
Yeah, and I don't know. As it relates to the Cardinals, Goldschmidt's like 36 now, and I was just so disappointed with them last year that I feel like a fool to pick them again this year. That's my feel. I think they won like 75, 76 games, something like that.
I think they won 71 games last year.
Yeah, 71. Yeah, I think they were last place or second. It was either them or Pittsburgh. I think they were last. And I just think, like, you know, if they win the division, they're going to be a 20-win improvement. Are they 20 games better than last year? I don't know. I'm just not a big believer in St. Louis. But, Michael, I'm going to have to wrap up and hit the road now. Sorry.
Yeah. I think we pretty much have everything covered. So great. Any last thoughts before we go?
Yeah. Well, Michael, thank you so much for having me on. Love the work that you do here. I really like the graphic you have here on the screen and the theme music. That's really cool. I'm going to have to incorporate that to my show in some capacity with the theme music. I'm a little jealous. Yeah. But yeah, keep up the good work. And if you guys want to check out my stuff, I've got a website and two different podcasts, actually. Excuse me. Oh, sick. If you guys want to, I'll say that again. If you guys want to check out my content, I have my own website and I've got two different podcasts. I've had the Jack Vita show. Oh, look at that. Here you go. Yeah, you can take a look there. It's jackvita.com. And I actually cover reality TV shows in addition to sports. So Deal or No Deal Island is a new hit show that I've been covering. And we've got exit interviews with the cast every single week, doing a lot of coverage there. And then so that's the Jack Vita show entertainment channel on YouTube. But most of you guys are sports fans, so please subscribe to my new channel. It's Jack Vita Show Sports. It's youtube.com/@Jack Vita Show. That's my YouTube channel. And yeah, we're doing a lot of baseball content. I've been slowly releasing my MLB preview, even though we're already late into the season. I went out and I did a bunch of previews with guests such as Dan O'Dowd from MLB Network and Jim Callis. I know you had Lindsey Crosby on the show recently. He's a friend of mine. I had him on. So yeah, we got lots of sports content over there. Go and check it out. Hit subscribe. I think a lot of people know I interviewed Anthony Rendon a few months ago. That was probably like a put me on the map kind of moment. But if you guys are interested, go and check that out. And you can also follow me on social media. It's at Jack Vita Show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
All right. So thanks for coming on in, Jack. Have a good rest of your day.
Thanks, Michael. We'll do it again soon. Thanks for having me.
All right. So again, as before we get out here, we just want to remind you, make sure to click the like button, subscribe, and comment down below what you think this Cubs series is going to go. Do the Diamondbacks win the series, or do you have Chicago winning? Let us know in the comments. And like I said, if you're listening in also, make sure to if you're listening on Apple or Google, make sure to follow the podcast. Give us a 5-star review so that way we get recommended to more people. And have a good rest of your day.